session number 23447, reel 12. Correction, reel 14.
Mr. Waller, reel 14. Now, I don't think you're quite sure where you went after the move towards the Mers. You didn't actually get to...
No, we didn't get there. And then...
There was sort of a gap between then and the invasion of Germany. And
yeah, there was sort of a quiet period where people were...
But you don't know where you were.
...re-equipping. I couldn't tell exactly where we were, and it was a quiet period. We were... changing direction, and instead of going towards the Meuse, we were changing direction and coming up. And the one incident I can remember, you know, we were moving fairly leisurely, you know, just a question of moving up it towards a position of concentration. And I can remember stopping, the column stopped on the road. And as was my habit, I always used to wander off and have a look round, see if there was anything worth picking up. And I spotted this pillbox on the crossroads, and I hadn't taken my rifle with me. So I went towards the pillbox, heard some sort of noise, and carefully looked inside and saw a number of pairs of jack boots sticking out on the straw, and realised the noise was them snoring. And fortunately, they stacked all their Spando machine gun and rifles and that on the far side. So I went back to, legged it back to the truck, by which time said, quick, give me a rifle. And by then an officer came up and said, what's up, the second in command? And I said, well, there's a pillbox up the road, and there's some Germans in it. So he was one of these gung-ho chaps, so he grabbed a shovel, and two or three of us got rifles and et cetera, and we went up there, and we got there, and I showed him what it was. He said, well, you go in, get over the far side where their weapons are, and cover them, and then I will follow in. I thought, well, don't like it. Perhaps someone had got a pistol or grenade laying there. But anyway, one does what one's told in the army, and went across, and then he came in with brandishing this shovel and hit them across the feet with their boots, and they poor devils woke up. They were obviously second-rate troops, shall we say. They were... few of them were knocking on, you know, look, between 40 and 50, and they dazedly came to, and about six of them got them out, and I picked all the weapons up and slung them over my shoulder in a sling and took them back. And, sort of little incidents like that used to happen, you see, or you might suddenly get a burst of fire where there was... They used to leave small pockets behind, and, you know, nothing.
I'm a bit confused because there wouldn't be any retreat at that point. I mean, because you'd be within your own area.
Yeah, oh, yeah, but we were moving across. You know, we'd gone towards the Meuse, and then we were moving across to get into order an assembly point for when we were going to get into Germany. So there were still, you know, pockets of resistance around.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, the next thing, I mean, we got to a concentration area and were told that we were going to move up into Germany. And that was, I don't know how you pronounce it, Axtan or something, was where we were. He's got it down there, but...
Axtan?
Yeah, Axtan or something. That's where we crossed...
Zanten?
Yeah, is that how you pronounce it?
I've no idea.
I know. But that's where we were going to make the crossing, you know, from where we were, out that the 7th Armoured Division was going to cross over there. And
what do you remember of the crossing?
Quite a reasonably quiet crossing. They must have picked it well, which for an area which wasn't being defended. We got some fire, but nothing too alarming, you know.
That was near Weasel.
Yeah.
But across the Rhine. I mean, well, how did you actually cross the Rhine? It's a big river.
Yeah.
How did you get across?
In assault boats. And the heavy stuff followed on later. But
were you the first people across, or had the crossing already been made?
The crossing had already been made, so... And they were putting up a Bailey Bridge.
And where'd you go then?
Which direction did we go? We were making, once we crossed the river there, we were making towards Hamburg. And that was our final, or our destination, towards Hamburg. And most of the towns we came across, they'd more or less almost given up by then, you know.
What was the state of the towns and the countryside like? I mean, how damaged was it?
It wasn't too bad because they weren't big towns, you know. They hadn't been subject to bombing like the cities had been. So, some of them suffered a bit from shell fire if there was any resistance going on in or around, but they were more or less the smaller towns and villages that were we were going through, you know. You tried to bypass, because we've learned from experience in a car, and if you absolutely flattened the pace, then you couldn't get through for the rubble. So there was a tendency to not to do too much damage to them, which would prevent any advance of your armoured columns. So.
And what about the Germans? How did you get on with, what was their reaction to you? How did they?
Well, their idea was to put out white sheets or whatever, sign of surrender, and we had nothing to do with them. I mean, we didn't. We'd been warned not to fraternise. And then there was warnings of the, what they call the werewolves, the youngsters on a resistance movement, and everybody was a little bit nervous about that, because by then one could see the end of the war in sight, and nobody wanted to get shot sort of 4 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever it is, before the end of the...
Now, was there any particular fighting you recall? You seem to have gone towards Borken and then Stadhorn and Ahaus and Heek.
Yeah.
Was there much actual fighting on the way?
Well, yes, there was fighting, but it was more small scale, you know, where a village would be defended by strong points or something like that, or outside, and
were you once again fairly redundant on the anti-?
Yeah, yes. In fact, towards the end, because we weren't being used much, I was transferred onto carriers, the flame throwing carriers.
Now tell me about them. What were the flame? What, tell me about the flame throwing. How did they work?
It was an only universal carrier, and you had a big round tank on the back, and. On the left-hand side, which was where normally your brain gunner was, you had a hose, a pipe which came through there, and you ejected the flame from there. When you squeezed it, it ignited and squirted out and sort of set fire to whatever it landed on.
Now, were you a driver or were you on the actual flamethrower?
No, I was driver.
And how were they used in action? Because although they're quite a powerful weapon, they're also a vulnerable weapon.
Oh, very vulnerable, because you've only got to get hit in the tank, and the damn thing would explode or go up in flames.
So how were they used, or how?
Well, the one action that I can remember was that the tanks had got near to a forest where there was an SS battalion dug in, and they were in narrow trenches and had sort of was keeping their heads down, and when the tanks went past, they were popping up with Panzerfaust and shooting in the rear of the tanks, and they lost about a couple of scout cars and about six tanks. And it was obvious they weren't going to make any progress. So it was our job to go in, and there were three carriers at the time. It was our job to go in and squirt these things over the positions where they, you know, we roughly knew where they were, where the knocked out tanks were, was to squirt these things and sort of burn them out type of thing.
Was this the Turtwalder Forest or another one?
I don't know the name of the forest.
And how was it in action? How effective was it when you used it like that?
Oh, it was very effective, because it was a very dry summer, and consequently it started a forest fire, and I remember Div HQ had to move because it nearly got engulfed in the flames, and rather than getting a pat on the back, we got a reprimand for starting the forest fire. So,
but it cleared the dirt.
It cleared, yes, because the...
It was quite... Were you having any thought? It was a pretty horrific weapon.
Oh, yes, it was,
yes. What did you think of that?
Not nice. You were glad you weren't on the other end of it. But, you know, at that time, I say, it was obvious to everybody that you were approaching the end of the war, and nobody was sort of worried as long as you stopped alive, and that was all your concern was, you know.
Did it really start to worry you, this? You mentioned how you felt.
Yes, you got very edgy, you know. You think, well, you were very careful what you... If you got into a village, you know, you no longer started picking things up. You were always careful, but you were doubly careful, you know. You were very edgy, and you sort of, no, I'm not going to go in that building. And you had a tendency to look and get covering fire and say, well, if you see anything, just open fire. Because there was a complete disregard for the buildings or anything like that. Not so, I mean, France, well, I mean, they got damaged, but you didn't do it deliberately. But in Germany, I mean, it was sort of, well, nobody cared, you know. It's their fault they started the war, so there was a different attitude in while you were in Germany, and everybody, as I say, was... If somebody came along, and it's no good them saying we want volunteers for a patrol or a job, because nobody would have done it, because of that. Everybody was thinking, I just want to keep my head down and keep alive, because things are getting very much towards the end then. And it was sort of almost like a nervous tension.
Did you have many casualties in that period?
Not heavy, but you suffered them, whether, you know, what the numbers were, I couldn't remember, but you didn't get heavy casualties, but... it was inevitable. You got them. There would always be, you know, where mines or booby traps have been laid, or a small strong point would hold out until it was overcome, and you know, just that was the way it was. It really, the resistance didn't started to almost cease, and casualties cease. Almost when, by the time when we got to Hamburg.
That would be in April, would it?
Yeah.
What happened when you got... is there anything else before you got there, or is that the next thing you remember?
Now, there's one thing, one point we missed out earlier on was the Arnhem Do. We were on the flank to... when the big drop was made at the various bridges, you know, the bridge too far, as they call it, we were on the left flank. When I say we, 30 Corps, and we were moving up alongside, but the resistance was such that we only got as far as Nijmegen, and we had to, well, we got as far as where the American 101st, the Screaming Eagle, I think the name was, had their drop zone, and we relieved some of them. But then we couldn't get any farther, nor could the mains.
What kind of opposition did you come under?
Oh, it was very fierce, all the way. They were set up points within the forest on the thing, and there was only one main road going through, and everything was jammed up on that. And as soon as you got any vehicles or tanks knocked out, the whole thing came to a halt. And if you tried to go round it, you found that a lot of them had been mined round the side, and it was very slow. The opposition was very heavy, and the progress was very slow. And eventually, we were switched down to Nijmegen. We'd gone towards Nijmegen, and we were switched down to Eindhoven. And it was more or less realised that it just wasn't going to get through.
So, getting back into Germany, anything before you went to Hamburg?
Well, on the way there, we passed nearby to Belsen, and it was told that, well, we were told that they wanted all officers to go down. I mean, Belsen, we didn't know what a concentration camp was particularly, but all officers were to go in. And one of the officers said, right, well, you can drive me in. And I drove his Jeep in, and we got down to Belsen, and it had just been opened. And I think it took me 5 years to get rid of the smell out of my nose, because there were these sort of scarecrow skeletons laying all over the place. It was dead bodies, and they were still rounding up the guards there. And we spent the day looking round the place, well, best part of the day, and then we drove back to the unit. And
why did you go and look at it? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, well,
not you, but why did the officers go?
Well, I think it was just to let them see what the hell had been going on, you know. And
what were your? I don't know whether you can remember some of the things you saw, but what were your reactions to what you saw, and what did you know?
Well, you know, it was absolutely shattering. I mean, it was appalling. You just couldn't realise that people could sort of behave in such, or treat other human beings in such a manner. And in fact, one incident, I mean, I saw it happen. There were still some young, I don't know what they call themselves, but young young Nazis or whatever they were. They were still there using some of the, shall we say, dying as target practice. And I saw one of the officers go up and bang, bang, shoot three of them just like that. So
shoot three of the guards, the German guards.
Yeah, well, these youngsters, you know, that were running around, you know, it was incredible. It was beyond belief, you know, when you to see all the state they were in, these emancipated bodies in the state they were in, you know. It's something you can't really comprehend, and it was unbelievable. I whether it was done to on a psychological basis of saying, well, this is what we've been fighting, this is a sort of thing, you know, for the final push, I don't know, but it was they got all, we had a job around, we only stopped for 24-48 hours. But that we had to go around and round up some of the people living nearby, including the burgomaster and all that. And they were taken off and had to go and were taken into the camp and shown, because they all denied any knowledge that they knew anything about it or that such places existed. In the same way as in the latter stages, every German soldier you captured said, "Well, I'm not a German, I'm Hungarian or I'm Romanian." You wonder where all the Germans were, you know. Everybody denied everything. So, it was a bit disconcerting. And then, as I say, we moved up towards Hamburg. And
what happened when you got to Hamburg?
They were still fighting. When we got to Harburg, which is just a few kilometres from Hamburg, we were still getting fired at as we were crossing the bridge at Harburg. So there was still resistance going on. And then we swung round, sort of went through some of the ruins of Hamburg, but only on the outskirts, and then we started making our way towards the Elbe, the River Elbe, up Gluckstadt, towards that sort of area. The idea was...
And you said that the German resistance collapsed after you got to Hamburg.
Yeah.
Was that very noticeable?
Oh, yes, because it was like going out for a coach ride on a Sunday afternoon as opposed to being in the war. Firing had more or less ceased. It was once we got past Hamburg, virtually that was it as far as any fighting was concerned. And we were told that we were going up towards the Elbe and that we were going to cross into Denmark to liberate Denmark, which had appealed to everybody.
Why was that?
Well, when you liberate a country, you know, you're treated like conquering heroes. For some reason, we thought we were going to... It was a land of plentiful supplies, and we thought, we'd be in for a nice time as far as that was concerned. But then at the last minute, they said, hold fire. I'm trying to remember the exact place, but we were up to the border of Denmark, and we stopped there, and they said, oh, it's all over. The Germans have surrendered. So they will be coming out of Denmark. When they come through, all you've got to do is disarm them and search them. And there were hundreds of them coming out in lines. And we
were... Well, now, was this after VE Day or...
Oh, no, before VE Day.
So tell me what you saw of the surrendered Germans.
Well, there were just lines and lines of them coming out, but looking very dispirited and everything else. And they were just coming out and throwing their weapons into piles, you know, about the size of the height of this house, you know. About three piles of them, and they were just tossing their weapons down. And what happened to them eventually, the weapons, I don't know, but they were just coming out, and we were more or less just standing there. We were sort of like, oh, I'm watching them, of course, obviously, and with machine guns trained on them and all small arms. And what they did with the prisoners, they were taken over by rear echelon troops and taken back to POW camps. And then word came through that it was we were on by the Elbe there, and word came through that it was all over, and everybody sort of couldn't believe it for the moment.
Did you have any VE Day celebrations?
Well, we let off flares from mortars, and one came down and nearly hit a German barge, and so we threatened to be put on a charge. So that was our VE Day celebration.
No drink?
No, we didn't have any. it was a very... quite a fair, but yeah, sort of almost disbelief, you know.
How did you feel in yourself, though? Because you've been worrying about it.
Yeah, no. Oh, deep sigh of relief. And then suddenly, you know, we'd heard about these what they called the werewolves, the youngsters who were forming a resistance movement. And you started getting a little bit nervous and looking over your shoulder, you know, you thought, it's over. I don't want anything to happen now, you know, because there was all warnings and tales to be on your guard still, you know, that although the official surrender had been signed, there were still odd groups that might...
Did you see any signs of German resistance? I mean, werewolves or any other German resistance?
No.
So where were you based? Because you stayed where you were for quite a while, didn't you? Where did you...
Yeah, we went from one... A couple of villages around the Gluckstadt area. And...
You stayed in the Gluckstadt area?
Yeah. There were... I'm trying to think of the name of the other villages.
So we just looked at... It was near Gokuls and Gluckstadt.
Yeah.
And... They're pretty close together.
Yeah.
And what were you actually doing? Where were you living?
In some were billeted, because they're only small villages. I mean, not big enough to take hundreds of troops. We were issued with these small tents, and we were living sort of in the field. Or on your truck, or so, you know, if you were lucky, you were in billets. But most of the billets were taken over for Platoon HQ, where you set up your wireless radio headquarters and such like. And we were just sort of milling around.
So you were basically at Goko, you were in these sort of tents, one man tents.
Yeah.
What were your duties?
Well, just to sort of keep an eye on what was happening, really. There was nothing particularly happening. There were no real troops in the area, up that part. And then we got orders to move to Gluckstadt, where there was...
When would that be? What about roughly?
It would be in the May.
So you were only at Gokuls for a very short
time. Oh, yes, yeah. It would be end of May, beginning of June, we moved up to Gluckstadt. And there was a big German naval barracks there. And there was about 1,000 German Wrens, or whatever they called them, the Deutsche Maidens, or whatever they were, about 1,000 German men. And we had to deal with them, sort of check over, you know, check them over and ship them off back to the rear to go to POW camp. There was a couple...
How did you get on with it? I mean, how were they to deal with it?
Well,
naval person.
Weren't very happy, very polite, but... as we didn't understand the language, we don't quite know whether they were calling us Mr. Tommy or horrible bastard, you know. It's but they weren't very happy about things, but that's understandable. But we quickly got them, you know, we gathered them all together and got them into one section of the barracks, and then obviously sent a signal back, and trucks came up and took them away to whatever POW camp or whatever they were going to do with them.
Now, did you occupy the naval barracks then?
Yep, we went in there and we occupied it, and it was a very modern... It must have been built either just before or during the war, because...
But what were they like? Tell us what they were like.
Quite fantastic. In the middle of the barracks, they had a sports arena. There was football pitches, running track. They had horses there with riding stables. Inside, they had, you know, when a fuse blows, the modern thing is you press a button to restore it. They had them in 1945 in there. There were showers, everything there. And the naval ratings were their sleeping area, living area, was 6 to a room. And the NCOs was either 1 or 2 to a room, depending on how high the rank was. And it was a wonderful place to be, you know. And